Welcome to this week's Level Up, the podcast where we ask deeper questions, where we deep dive to give you color behind the headlines. And joining me today is investigative journalist and co-founder of Amabungane. He is a man that describes himself as a frustrated cop, as a street lawyer, and definitely as a person who holds thugs in suits accountable. He's not here to entertain power, but to hold it. To hold it accountable, investigative journalist Sam Soul is our guest today. You look amazing and sound fantastic. So thank you for the time and thank you for rushing through your other meeting to spend this time with us here. And I think my first question that I really would like to get into the meat of is, you work with explosive kind of exposés and have been for many, many years. And also with the kind of people who are whistleblowers, right? This General Mkhwanazi's expose and what he has uncovered and what may still be uncovered now that there's an inquiry unfolding is quite hectic. And I'd like to hear what you think this says about kind of institutional accountability, because he's the general commissioner and he felt that he had no other way to talk through these things than in this way. What do you think that means for this institution of SAPS and all the various accounting bodies, IPED, Parliament, all of those people?
Look, I think that the first thing is, he started to show us how bad things are. And that doesn't mean to say that they're bad only on one side. But he's ripped aside one curtain, but there are other curtains, including ones that perhaps he's hiding behind. And, you know, in South Africa, we like many people in unstable situations, we're looking for a strong man, we're looking for a leader, and I think that's a big mistake that we're stepping into, to assume that this guy is the new savior. So I think the issues that he's raised are really important, but I think what the history of the police has shown, and also some of the reporting around the question marks about the political killings task team that he was talking about, show that there are multiple sides to this. This is, in my view, partly about succession in the SAPS, but above that, it's also about succession in the ANC. In my view, politicians and people above the police, who are also benefiting or maneuvering in this process. And the problem is, I think there have been a couple of good articles in the last little while. Our security services, our criminal justice system has become so politicized that it's very difficult to wade through, all the interests that are playing out, interests that are not about service that the police should be performing, or that the prosecution service should be performing, or that the intelligence services should be performing. You know, it's about power, influence, money. All of those things, and I think it's good if we start to ask the hard questions about what's going on now, but also where this comes from.
Where it all went wrong. And Sam, you talk about ripping one part of the veil, and you often operate in all of the various permeations of investigative journalism, and I think the police are the state's most visible entity that for us normal citizens kind of look at and say, this is what's between me and anarchy at the police. And this kind of expose, do you think, what do you foresee as kind of the social fallout, especially at a time such as this, where there's such high crime and definitely no trust within this institution and it's saving us? What do you think the social fallout could be? And also maybe looking at GNU, what the political fallout of this type of expose can be?
Yes, look, I mean, I think we saw during the 2021 riots that there's not the police were singularly absent for a long time, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, that in terms of keeping chaos at bay. But I, these are the core functions of these agencies, and I think for too long. They, those roles have become degraded, polluted. And this is an attempt, and I think an opportunity to try and reset some of that. In that process, we're going to have to try to distinguish between lesser evils. There are no angels in this process. And there was some reporting over this weekend in the Sunday Times that IPED, not IPED, sorry, IDAC was about to
Expose.
arrest or was to warrant for General Nkunazi and General Masemola, the National Commissioner, and that this was kind of a preemptive strike. I think it's problematic. The theater that General Nkunazi presented, kind of not a coup, but suggesting, don't you dare come after me. We've had quite a lot of that in this country, and it's that certain people are untouchable. We had it with the former president Zuma, and I think the fact that people on not looking at the situation with those shades of gray that you spoke about, looking at the situation critically, that they're wanting to say, this side is all good and this side is all bad. That's not how this world works. Again, not to say that the allegations made by General Nkunazi are not very serious, and that we as Amabungani have reason to believe that we've also been looking at some things that he alluded to, but none of this is uncomplicated, and I think citizens should be careful before they give unquestioning loyalty and support to one side or another.
Well, you talk of theatrics, and one of the things that has really caught the imagination of South Africans and robust debate about the manner in which he chose to use his office and the uniform and what he presented at that press conference. Do you want to talk us a little bit about, from a media and journalistic perspective, when you see such theatrics, what are the signifiers that we as the audience may not quite see overtly? And how do you think we as South Africans should be responding, firstly, to the theatrics, separately from the information that was given?
Yes, look, so the image of a provincial commissioner breaking protocol in the sense of raising concerns in public, but also in that setting with the National Intervention Unit masked people by his side, with his whole top provincial leadership there, backing him up, making a call that, you know, the business community, that, you know, people need to get behind this, essentially behind him. That's all problematic. In a sense, there was a good piece that Stephen Curtis wrote this week in Daily Maverick, in which he contrasted our loss of confidence and respect in the political authority of politicians, and you have people stepping into that vacuum. And while that's understandable, that's very, very dangerous. And if, you know, it is limited to raising red flags about a particular issue and bringing forward evidence, that's fine. But I think there was more to it than that. It was not only about the evidence. It was also about as we've been discussing, the theater of saying, be careful about coming after me.
Well, one of the things that he spoke about, besides the shutting down of the political killings task team, is we know in South Africa here, whether it's Babita Deokaran, and their mouth, there was here in Gauteng a couple of weeks ago, an auditor, you know, shot in his driveway. We know what happens to whistleblowers. Is this not a way maybe for himself to safeguard himself, to say, everybody, look, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm, you know, so that if you see anything go down, here are the 20 people that you should consider to be behind it.
Well, no. So look, I mean, he is somebody who has those protective assets on hand. He doesn't have to display them. He's not like an auditor working, you know, at the city of Ekurhuleni. He is a former member of the special task force, etc. So in terms of his own safety, I think that was not really justifiable. He could have made the allegations and put forward the evidence, in slightly different circumstances. But that's not to say that what he did say should be discounted. I think the concerns raised about the kind of politicization of policing are valid, but they're valid in a number of different directions. There have been, and I don't know, and it's hopefully what this commission is going to start to unpack. I don't know the true facts, but there have been counter allegations that the work of the political killings task team has itself been political. It has been directed at particular factions, particular individuals. It has been the subject of, very, very high expenditure, the use of methods that may not be constitutionally defensible. General Nkwanazi has been building his public profile with a kind of no quarter given approach to encounters with armed criminals, and there's a lot of understandable public support for that approach. But again, that comes with certain other kind of political, ethical, and social costs. And all I'm saying is we mustn't be blind to these shades of gray and problems with each side. And there has been some evidence presented. There have been some allegations made, but it's by no means conclusive. I think General Nkwanazi should be the first to be handing that evidence over to the commission?
Well, you know, speaking of the commission, and I love the fact that you said hopefully the commission will expose some of these things. This is President Cyril Ramaphosa's fifth commission, judicial commission that he's put together since 2018, right? And
yes.
He has been, and this, for a lot of South Africans, it also just looks like more of the same. What is your view on what he outlined at his press conference on Sunday night? And what is your take on what could come out of this?
So, look, I 100% agree with you. If even going back as recently as the Zondo Commission, if there'd been more action on that and the recommendations and the rot that was exposed in the ruling party, in the criminal justice system, if that had been attacked and addressed, then we wouldn't be sitting where we are today. But at the same time, I don't think that in this case he had much choice. These are very serious allegations against the sitting minister, but they by no means conclusive. And I think that, as I've suggested, there are counter allegations. There's a lot of murkiness that needs to be kind of brought into the light here. And so having a kind of external independent entity do that is probably the right thing. But as we've seen, South Africa tends to have a rather legalistic approach to commissions, where everybody is legally represented. It's very procedural and so on. And so something that is planned to last 3 or 6 months, it stretches out into years. And by the time there's a report, you know, everything has moved on and the political landscape has changed. And I think, you know, to go to your criticism, it's something that that Ramaphosa used again and again for precisely that reason, so that he doesn't have to deal with the hard choices. I think that the Commission of Inquiry into the capture of SARS, the Revenue Service, was an example of a different approach, where the judge took a more inquisitorial approach, shut down a lot of, you know, legal maneuvering and nonsense, and actually delivered a very hard-hitting report in quite a short time, which then, you know, people were able to act on. I think it remains to be seen how this one is handled. I'm not aware of the actual terms of reference having been published. I don't think so.
I don't think that's been published.
So I'm only going on what the president said, and that was extremely wide. You know, he did say that look at the prosecution service, the judiciary, because General Konazi made comments about the judiciary. I think in my view is probably more referring to at magistrates court level, not necessarily judges, but still. So it could be very wide. So it could you know, develop into this long-term amorphous thing, which I think is a problem. But on the other side, the people he's chosen, Matlanga, really, you know, one of the best choices that he could have made, very respected, and hopefully will kind of take some of this by the scruff of its neck, and you know, give South Africans some of the answers that we all want, and give us some of the accountability that we want.
I'll tell you, I have my own version of a serenity prayer, and I call it a prosperity prayer, that I should have the kind of job security that ANC cadres have in our government. Because preemptively, the police minister then says, can I get special leave rather than be dismissed or put on special leave or whatever, right? And then a new minister is announced, Professor Kachalia. What do you make of that
Yes.
appointment? That's rather different.
Yes. Look, I think again, I think that's a positive thing, but it kind of shows up the fact that there are two deputy ministers, neither of whom any of us, not even just the president, none of us would trust their appointment, which tells you something about, the bloated cabinet and the way in which we run the country. I think Prof. Kachalia chairs the National Anti-Corruption Commission, if I've got the name right. So
There are so
he's
many
got,
commissions too.
yes. And he was, I think he was MEC for Safety and Security in Gauteng in his day. So I think he's and I think he's somebody who's straight. The problem is, you're in the police, you're coming into a shark tank, really. And the extent to which he's able to kind of navigate that, when he doesn't have, maybe he's going to bring some independent staff, but he doesn't have independent staff, etc. And just in relation to Minister Mthunu, there are question marks in my mind about some of the people surrounding him, whether they were his choices or whether they were there, and how well he's been served, and so on. I mean, at this stage, you also have to be seeing as, he's definitely somebody who has presidential ambitions. You have to also ask yourself to the extent to which this is an attempt to sideline Senzo Mthunu as a potential ANC leadership candidate. So I think, if there were the, if the evidence was that was presented was a degree away from the minister, it was the chief of staff, it was the this the that it the friend or the acquaintance. It's not clear exactly what the minister knows or doesn't know, and presumably, he's going to be summoned, and I think he's indicated he's very willing to cooperate, etc. So I think we have
Yeah,
to be
well, he doesn't
careful.
have a job to go to, and he's got the salary. He should show up.
Yeah, look, but in the scheme of things, I don't think you could have just removed him. I don't think that was, that I think that would have been the president doing what perhaps other factions would have wanted him to do, and maybe didn't want to do that. So he's giving Minister Mthunu the benefit of the doubt. We'll all see whether that is warranted. I don't know.
So innocent until proven guilty. But in the past, when the DA was still a very active opposition, we would have heard a lot from the DA. But within the GNU now, there's a little bit of silence there. Not much kind of pushback. Could this have been an opportunity to strengthen the GNU alliance by maybe bringing in a DA player into this role, do you think?
Well, given the president had just dismissed a deputy minister
Yeah,
for a very minor infraction, I think, look, it does kind of place some of those dynamics, in a different light. We really wish, as the population, that the GNU would get serious and you know deal with the huge challenges that we have. But you know, realistically, this is about power, money, you know, politics, and so on. And as a country, we kind of have to force our politicians to concentrate on doing their jobs rather than on, you know, fighting each other and jockeying for power. It's the same in relation, I think, to some of the other departments and so on. You know, people who should be serving us are focused on serving themselves or serving other masters, and you know, the power dynamics within the state and with their rivals, rather than, you know, service delivery for us. And hopefully this process, and I'm trying to be optimistic, will inject a little bit more accountability in terms of removing or exposing people who are really focused not on doing their jobs, but on staying in power and staying attached to the revenues that are derived from the state, as opposed to serving you and me.
Speaking of serving you and me, this comes at quite a critical time as all these various parties are beginning to gear themselves up towards local general elections. Even though this is playing out at a national level and a provincial level, do you think that this will have a bearing and an impact on how people show up at the poll next year?
Look, I think so. I mean, I'm afraid it's the ruling party. I think you're seeing a lot of maneuvering around, you know, securing their, you know, their retirement ahead of the next loss in support at the polls. And you know, so it's a very destructive arena we're in, where people are saying to themselves, well, you know, the ANC is going to be down maybe to 30% next time, so you know, I'm going to make sure that my fortune, while I still have power, I'm going to make sure that my fortune is secured. I'm going to make sure that the people who are left in power are not going to go after me. That I'm going to be left alone to enjoy my ill-gotten gains. You know, so I think while there's kind of the potential and in some cases the reality of a lot of new positive energy in the GNU, with, you know, both the DA and the ANC competing a little bit and, you know, keeping an eye on each other in government, and there's a bit of input, you know, impetus to focus on better performance. I think there's also a countervailing thing where people are saying, we've got to eat now because, you know, the plate may be taken away from us soon.
Mm-hmm. So you've spent a long time kind of also because of when Amabungane was kind of first established and the work that you started doing, studying and looking at state capture and the former president, Jacob Zuma, and all the machinations around his shenanigans. This is happening central in KZN, which is always a pabda cake in terms of politics and politicking. Just looking at the sheer volume of political killings in that province tells you what you're dealing with there. Do you foresee an MK making any kind of play, capitalizing on all of this that's happening there right now?
Yes. So that's partly what bothers me. The people who are coming out in, you know, unstinting support of General Mkhwanazi. It does bother me because, you know, MK or the people in MK, you know, have not been held accountable for the sins of the past. And yeah, they're looking for ways to, you know, to regain footholds, insulate themselves, etc. And you know, a lot of the reason as to why we are where we are was because President Zuma, when he you know, took power, realized that he was vulnerable to the criminal justice system still. And I think he spent his first term really unstitching those institutions in various ways. And it was only, you know, in the second term that the kind of the more commercial state capture, the penetration of state-owned entities and the huge contracts and the extraction of huge amounts of cash by the Guptas, that only happened after the, you know, the accountability institutions had been hollowed out. And I think we're still dealing with that legacy now. So, you know, I really blame him for a lot. And, you know, I think a lot of those people are still around and still want to continue with that process. But it goes back, you know, even further. You know, President Mbeki now has been rehabilitated in a way now that he's an elder. But you know, for me, the arms deal was kind of the original sin, where the a lot of the kind of optimistic and idealistic oversight ideals of the new government were swept aside in the interests of pursuing the arms deal. And again, you know, when the Scorpions were disbanded, both the kind of Zuma faction and the Mbeki faction at that stage, the one thing that they agreed on was that the Scorpions were a threat to, you know, their ability to determine outcomes in the criminal justice sphere. Former President Mbeki in the case of Celebi and you know, obviously in relation to the prosecution of President Zuma. And again, we, you know, our institutions that are there to protect and serve all of us were sacrificed for, you know, much more narrow political interests. And I think we are reaping that whirlwind now again.
Sure. Still. Well, now you take us back. You know, when you talk about Police Commissioner Jackie Celebi and all of those ramifications. So does this create, and just final thoughts, does this create for you and Amabungane a field day, as it were, for your investigations, the kind of things that you have been thinking about, that you have been looking at, discussing in your newsroom? What is there something explosive coming out from you guys anytime soon related to these stories?
No, look, so you'll be aware that I think you guys invited me last week and I said no, because I still don't really know what's going on, and I'm you know, I'm very hesitant to kind of have people that you know want to make instant judgments on very complicated things. So we are working on an aspect of this, but you know, the process of, you know, we don't take things to court, but we have a fairly high bar of evidence, and also we don't rely just on one. We try not to rely on one source. We try not to make ourselves, you know, vulnerable to kind of leaks, because I think a lot of our politics has been driven by deliberate leaks from one faction to nail another faction, and so on. And sometimes you've got to look through that and say, you know, yes, this leak is pointing in this direction, but perhaps the more interesting thing is who is leaking this and why. That's, you know, that's not necessarily the case in this case. But look, this is a very critical time for our country. It's a very critical event, juncture, the kind of initiative, the intervention that General Kunazi made, and you know, we together with other media, we're looking at it. But you know, I would be much happier if our country was more boring, and you know, I had less to do, because we're very, very small, and the whole, you know, corpus of investigative journalists in this country is very small, and you know, the tasks and the problems are enormous. So part of the problem is, or the part of the difficulty is working out what is strategic, and also then, you know, whether you have the connections, the sources, the skills to actually take things further, and so yeah. But I think my colleagues, you know, elsewhere as well, are obviously doing similar things. You know, News 24 have done amazing work on the Cat Matlala thing that flowed out of the Babita Deokoran investigation. I thought the Sunday Times this past weekend did a really good job of raising some of the same issues that I've raised, to say, look, there's not one picture here. This with one facet. This is a, you know, this is a situation with multiple facets, and we need to look at it, you know, more carefully.
Many shards to this broken glass. Thank you.
Beautiful way of putting it. Yes.
Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you for coming on and having this chat with us. This has been very illuminating. Really, it is, because I think people such as yourselves have not only a long lens, because you've been in the industry for so long, but also fascinating insights into some of the things that we may not look at as just general citizens, from the professional aspect of what is playing out in front of us. So thank you for coming on.